Well, you've heard of Hubble, the telescope in space, ending its long life just now. So let's meet its giant and very expensive successor being built. Here's Dan Falk.
The Goddard Space Flight Center is an enormous, sprawling complex, and Building 29 by itself is pretty huge. It's about the size of a big city train station. From a viewing gallery on the second level, I'm looking down on the main floor, where the world's largest and most ambitious space telescope is taking shape.
So what you see here is Goddard Space Flight Center's building clean room, and this clean room was originally set up to do staging of the Hubble Space Telescope servicing missions.
That's Mark Clampin, the observatory project scientist for the James Webb Space Telescope. Down on the floor below us, I can see a couple of dozen scientists and engineers buzzing around, wearing protective white suits and face masks. They're weaving their way through an array of cranes and ladders and miles of cable, and a very large robotic arm that puts all of the telescope's pieces into place.
This is where most of the integration of both the instrument package and the primary mirror and the telescope assemblies will occur.
There are some big differences between the James Webb Space Telescope and its predecessor, the Hubble. One difference is that while Hubble had a single mirror, 2.4 meters across, the JWST will have an array of 18 mirrors with an overall diameter of 6.5 meters. That's small compared to the 10-meter telescopes used in some of today's best ground-based telescopes, but 6.5 meters is huge for a space telescope. Another important difference is that while Hubble worked in visible and ultraviolet light, JWST is designed to work in infrared light. Detecting infrared rays is like detecting heat, and that comes with a whole slew of challenges. After all, lots of things give off heat, even the telescope's own electronics. So you have to do something to cool the telescope down. Way down. Dr. Clampin.
JWST is an infrared telescope, which means that it's going to be imaging heat signatures from very faint objects in the universe. And if you want to image in the infrared, you need to, first of all, take the step to make sure that you're not imaging your own thermal background. So to do that, we cool the telescope to very low temperatures. So JWST will operate at a temperature of 40 Kelvin, which is 40 degrees above absolute zero. The way we do that is by having a sunshield, and this sunshield comprises four Kapton membranes, the size of a tennis court for each one. So we operate the telescope in the shadow created by this big sunshield, and we essentially always keep the telescope positioned so that the back side of the membranes are facing the sun, and then the telescope has a view of about 35% of the sky at any given time. And over the course of a year, it will cover the whole sky, so we can still observe any object we want.
That sun shield that Dr. Clampin mentioned is enormous. When it's finally deployed, it'll be the size of a tennis court. It will be the telescope's largest feature. But first, it has to fit inside the launch vehicle, in this case an Ariane 5 rocket, and that means it has to be folded up, like a giant work of origami. And that's just one of the many engineering hurdles faced by the crew here at Goddard. One huge problem involves the drastic changes in temperature that the telescope will have to endure. When it's finally deployed, it'll be cooled down to 40 Kelvin, but here at Goddard, they're working at room temperature. And the tricky thing is, whenever the temperature changes, the shape of all the components will change because things expand and contract as the temperature rises and falls. And that's especially important for the telescope's mirrors, which have been polished to have ultra-smooth surfaces.
So this is one of the challenges of JWST, that the telescope has to work at 40 Kelvin, and yet we have to polish the mirrors at room temperature. So we polish the mirrors until we get down to a surface figure of the order of 100 nanometers. And that's what you see over there. That flight spare is kind of where we stop. And then we take it down to the Marshall Space Flight Center, and we cool the mirror down, and we measure its surface shape. And from that measurement, we can then figure out what we still need to polish into the mirror so that the next time we cool it down to 40 Kelvin, it will have the right prescription. And just to give you some idea, the surface figure error is around 20 nanometers once they're finished at 40 Kelvin. So we call this cryopolishing.
Yeah, 20 nanometers, 20 billionths of a meter.
Yes.
Another big difference between the JWST and the Hubble is that this telescope is heading a lot further out. It's going to a place called the L2 Lagrange point. That's a gravitationally stable point about 1.5 million kilometers from the Earth. By comparison, the Moon orbits at a distance of around 400,000 kilometers. So this telescope is going to be almost 4 times further out than the Moon. That means there won't be any servicing missions. Everything has to work perfectly the first time. And so the testing continues. For starters, they have to make sure that the telescope can survive the launch itself. So they have machines that shake the telescope's components, machines that push and pull on the various parts. They have a centrifuge to simulate the high G forces that you experience at launch. This all happens in the buildings immediately adjacent to Building 29. And then there's this unusual room.
So this is the acoustics chamber. Most spacecraft will come through here. We'll bring the entire ISIM payload through here.
The reason Goddard needs an acoustics chamber is because a rocket launch releases a lot of energy, and much of that energy is in the form of sound waves. So you need to make sure that your equipment can withstand an intense sonic blast.
When the rocket launches, they're like jet engine sound. So that's what this is. We blast it with like rocket engine sound.
That's Ray Lundquist, one of the Goddard engineers. If you're wondering what the acoustics chamber at Goddard looks like, well, think back to the last time you were at a big rock concert at a sports arena, and think of the speakers on either side of the stage. Now picture a speaker about 10 times that big. And now imagine walking inside it. We've all heard of a walk-in closet. Now picture a walk-in speaker.
And how loud does it get?
115 decibels. I think that's about where we tested. 110 to 115 decibels is our level.
I forget, does that damage human hearing?
Yeah, you would, I think, pass out. Yeah, at about 115 decibels, you pass out.
There's a lot at stake with the James Webb Space Telescope. With a price tag of around $9 billion, it's one of the most expensive science projects ever. It's led by NASA, the American Space Agency, with some 20 other countries contributing. The European Space Agency and the Canadian Space Agency are partners in the project. Still, the US is picking up the bulk of the tab, and it wasn't easy getting the US Congress to approve the funding. It might be a long time before anything on this scale is attempted again. And the launch, originally scheduled for 2011, has been pushed back several times. So it's not surprising that the scientists and engineers at Goddard are excited to see the telescope finally taking shape. And they're getting more excited as the 2018 launch date draws closer. Mark Clampin.
I think it comes down to the scientific payoff at the end. Before I worked on James Webb, I worked on the Hubble Space Telescope, and the last instrument I worked on took 10 years to get into orbit and installed on Hubble. And you always work on these projects with the science that it's going to do as a sort of end goal, and the science that you particularly want to do. That's the thing that gets me coming into work every day, is thinking about the planet observations I'm going to do with this telescope. And also just making sure that it can do all the science that we've said it can do.
The scientific payoff from the JWST could be enormous. The telescope could shed new light on the earliest chapters of cosmic history. It could give us a glimpse of the first structures that formed after the Big Bang. It might let us see planetary systems as they form, and it might even tell us something about the prospects for life beyond our solar system. With just over 3 years until launch, the scientists and engineers here still have a lot of work to do. At the Goddard Space Flight Center, I'm Dan Falk for The Science Show.
Thanks, Dan, who's based in Canada.